Welcome to the Self-Created Podcast, two gem-loving gems talking all things health, beauty, and culture. It's your girl, Lil Brown Shanika.
Hey, y'all. It's Little Brown Jurnell.
And it's the Self-Created Podcast. Woo, 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 woo. And I'm just, you know, I'd like to like throw in a couple things sometimes, so I'm glad that you caught on to that.
Of course. I was like, when you said it, I was like, oh, so we doing that today. Okay. I almost said my nickname for when I was growing up, because that truly is, you know, my Little Brown Jurnell is my nickname.
Well, we'll get into that. So for those that do not know, today we are discussing Bevie Smith's book. The title, oh Lord, come on, Shanika. Give me the title, Jurnell. I have my part on the highlights. Oh my God. Oh, Lessons from a Mother, Bevelations, Lessons from a Mother, Auntie, Bestie.
Yes.
By Bevie Smith. Oh, shame on me. It's anyways.
I was going to come save you. I was like,
But anyways, you know, I knew she was writing a book, and then Jurnell, you started talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was listening to her on Sirius, and mm-hmm. she was just like telling these stories, and I was just having kind of like a moment, I think January, February. And I just bought the book. I was like, I need, and I read like a review on it. Somebody's like, I wish I had this book in my 30s, 40s, hills. I wish I had it in my 50s. So I was like, oh my God, I need this freaking book. I just need some guidance. So anyways, so this book is like part biography, part, I guess, self-help workbook, maybe.
Yeah, I can say that. I can say there are some parts in the book where it's not stagnant and she's just talking to you. She wants you to do some actual reflection. Yeah. She wants you to do some deep diving, some excavating. So yes, it's when you think of workbook, you're thinking like a question and then a blank space for you fill in. That's not it. But there are some introspective questions that she's asking you throughout the book.
Yeah. So absolutely. And it doesn't like necessarily go from like beginning to the end. It's just kind of like quips here and there of her life when she was younger, you know, her career in entertainment industry. So, you know, just a quick overview. It's about how she was in a career in sales, making, you know, a really great amount of money, you know, that most people would be happy for, probably what most people would manifest. And she says that she was, I can't remember where she was back. I think maybe Paris or somewhere for
Milan
for like their fashion week. You know, she checked in, you know, she sat, nodded, everything looking fabulous.
And just dropped it.
Yeah. It was in the suite was amazing. The view's amazing. Everything's just freaking amazing. Start of one of those great, you know, movies where you're like, oh, hell yeah, it's visually stunning.
Right.
And she just dropped in the bed and started crying.
Right. And you're just like, clutches pearls. What do you mean, my dear? Why are you crying? This sounds amazing.
I know. So it basically, she just was not living the life that she wanted. And she, you know, gave herself, like she was like, I'm going to find a job, you know, secure the bag, which means, you know, get that money, because, you know, she's
get them coins.
Smart enough to know, like, if you're going to get the life you want, you need to have like some cushion. And even though she did have a cushion, she still had to learn how to budget a little bit better, because she didn't have the expense accounts and all the other things as before. Correct. But anyway, so, you know, the overview of the book is just going for what she wants, whether people thought it was crazy or not. They thought it was crazy. You know, giving herself like a time period to make it happen. Finding her little brown Bevie, which is basically the person that she was before maybe like middle school, where you really start caring and worrying about like what other people think about you, the girls, opposite sex, whatever.
Right.
And just getting back to, you know, that Black girl joy of just feeling like you could truly do anything before society is just like, no, this is what you're going to do.
Correct.
And then, you know, she talks about the four agreements a lot, which I actually have that book and I need to get on it.
we talked about that base like before in one of our podcasts, and I shared that I struggle with that book. It's that book and then The Alchemist. I struggle with
them. Yeah, I'm not even going to try The Alchemist.
I just... So yeah, continue.
So yeah, she refers back to that a lot. You know, she just talks about the people that have helped her, you know, throughout life. You know, she talks about her lovers, but she says she's saving names and all that other juicy detail for another book. Which
and I'm like, write it now.
I know, seriously, like, let's get on this, Bevy, please. You know, she talks about, you know, how she landed with Bravo, how she thought like this was going to be the big break and then not so much, and how something didn't feel right. You know, her Page Six job.
Right.
She was like, you could look at it as a big break. She was like, but I just was not happy. All the signs were there. Yes, the money was great, but I was just really freaking miserable.
Right.
And I don't know. I just related to that a lot. Of course, she talks about like her father, you know, sadly got COVID. He passed away. You know, she put that in there because she was writing the book during COVID.
Right.
So she talks about how she was able to, you know, take the time to write this book. She talks about her dinner events that she has, you know,
with Bevy.
Yeah, her dinner with Bevy. Talks about, you know, advice on, you know, don't give away your ideas, don't hype up the man, because once they hyped up and they've got their career going, don't be surprised if you get left behind.
Listen.
Like do your, like, if you got a great idea, do you, you know, sometimes it's great to share it. Other times it's not, just get it done and then let them see it. You know, have that one friend that you can unshamely, unabashedly call for whatever, you know. She was fortunate enough to have a friend who she was able to get a loan from. You know, she talks about how she had to sell some of her Goyard bags.
Yeah, and her Manolo Blahnik.
Yeah, so I feel like we're giving a little too much away. But anyways, it's just like a really, it was really great. And I just really needed it, especially as someone, you know, I just feel like I've always been, there's another podcast I listen to called More Than One Thing with Athena Calderon, and she calls herself a multi-hyphenate. And I've definitely always been a multi-hyphenate person. There's just so many things that I'm interested in. And, you know, our society is more to shame. Like, you know, you stick with one thing and that's what you're going to do until you're 65 and enjoy the rest of your life.
Boomers.
So, you know, I don't know. I just appreciate it for that. Just feeling like, especially as a Black girl or a Black woman, I should say, I'm not a girl anymore, but just how society can just knock you down in so many ways on what you want to do or, you know, what they think you should do. And, you know, when she starts talking about Little Brown Bevy, I'm just like, God, I miss me. And that spark I used to have, I was like, even the spark that I had, like in my 20s, when I just, I don't know, was more carefree. You know, of course, obviously like situations happen and things change, but I do feel like within the past year, I've really been getting back to just being a happy person, quite possibly since I was young, being happy for the first time in my adult life. And it's actually kind of scary to be truly happy.
And why do you think so?
Because I have depression, so I'm preconditioned just to be very sad. And just like wallow in it. Like for me, it's like really way more comfortable just to be sad, depressed, and just like feel defeated and give up. So I have to work really hard to be happy. So I guess just like I only speak for myself. And then I guess also because, you know, again, society, but I've just kind of been like on a, I don't give a fuck anymore what you think about me. I don't know if you saw it the other day, how I got interviewed, like that little snippet, and she was like, who's your motivator? I was like, me.
Yes.
And I was just like, it's not a humble brag. My number one motivator, because no one's going to love me more than me. No one's going to support me more than me. No one's going to hype me up more than me. No one's going to care about me more than me. And I was like, yeah, and my sons, but even that have a limit, because when I tell their asses they can't have ice cream one night, they sure as hell don't like me. So I am my number one person, and I will always be my number one person. Does that mean I don't care about the opinion of Janelle? Like, you know, of course, because I'll run stuff by her. But when it comes down to it, I'm going to hype me up. I'm going to brag about myself. I'm going to talk about myself. And it's not being an egomaniac. It's just being confident in who the hell I am.
Correct.
And, you know, I was thinking about like where in my life I feel like I'm confident. And I can honestly say that I am someone who will probably never question again whether or not I'm a good mother, because I know for a fact that I am. You know what yes. I mean? That's like another part of society where we like to do the mom guilt and stuff. And I'm just like, you know what? No, I'm sorry. Me and my boys have been way through way too much. I'm a good fucking mom.
Yes,
they're,
you are.
They, you know, they're good kids. And if this makes mm-hmm. you uncomfortable, you know, sorry, not sorry, but you probably right. need to check yourself and see why you're uncomfortable with it. Because yeah. I can promise you it's got nothing to do with what I'm doing or what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I don't know, I guess just like the whole thing out of this book I got was just confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, you saw that I put out there, I was like, hey, I really want to push my photography more this year. If anyone wants pictures taken, you know, I had mm-hmm. someone reach out and, mm-hmm. you know, I did something with Angie the other day. So I just like want to keep on going. I actually need to invest in a like a nicer camera. I need one with a higher megapixel and a full frame. But anyways, I'm not letting that stop me, like no excuses. Right. I'm just going out there doing it, researching. I'm not saying I'm the best, I'm the better, but I do know my shit.
Correct.
And I'm gonna put myself out there. And
dope.
Yeah, you know, it's just like, what would Bevy do?
What would that do? What
so,
would
that do? Yeah. So you go, Janelle, like what you got from this book, how it made you feel.
Girl. So I'll give the backstory. I've been following Bevy for a hot minuto.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I came across her. You know what? I really don't remember how I came across her, but I did. I think it might have been via Twitter. And then I followed her from Twitter onto Facebook and then from Facebook to Instagram.
She kind of talks about that in her book and how she was like known for her tweets and whatnot. Yeah. And got a huge following that way.
Exactly. So I when I saw that, I chuckled a little bit because I'm like, I'm one of your people. Like, even though you don't know me personally. But I was really inspired by her Dinner with Bevy series that she did years and years ago. I was super inspired. She used to do her Life with Vision dinners as well. And I know at one point I even thought about applying to go to one. It was held in Charlotte. And I stopped myself. Now looking back, there was no reason why I should stop myself. But I stopped myself because I was like, really, you know, who am I and what am I doing? And blah, 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 blah. It's really not that, you know, special, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I remember taking a look at the questions that she had in her application. And I really did. I counted myself out. It's like, oh, I can fill this out, but she probably won't pick me. So why even bother, right? So I didn't do it.
Stop that. See, look, you yes. rejected yourself before you were even able to get rejected.
I know. And, you know, that's the story of my life.
I mean, I get it too. But you know what? This is our year of the worst they can say is no.
Well, you know, my thing has always been the worst they can say is yes. Because I'm already prepared for the no. I'm having to do better about, you know, like you said, not rejecting myself before someone rejects me.
Right.
So reading the book to me was like another layer of getting to know Bevy past the persona of her online experience and personality, and getting to see that other side and seeing her progression and knowing her story. And when I read it, I was like, oh my gosh, there's so many, you know, similarities in regards to her young adult life, except for the partying. I wish I could, you know, that sound Uptown Bev sound like it. She Big Bev, girl, she sounds like a hoot and I would have loved, but I was also like 7. Actually, mm-hmm. no, I was not born when she was out there. But anyway, what I really got out of it is the introspect that, or being, you know, asking those questions beyond the questions about yourself and what you want, and being honest with yourself, and then taking that information and putting it into action and really playing all out. That was probably the biggest thing that I got from the book, because she continually asked the questions onto herself. And, you know, like she said, like The Four Questions was one of her favorite books and she referred to it a lot. And, you know, she did a lot of other self-development books and this, that, and the third. However, it really all came back to her doing the work, the inner work. And with us, I see us as progressing in doing the inner work. I know for a fact in the last 5 to 6 years, we have been doing the work. And in the last 2 to 3, been really getting in the muck and the mire and cleaning. Mm-hmm. I mean, like hands and knees scrubbing with all the cleaning products and, you know, opening up every closet door, organizing, getting messy, you know, taking all the things to the Goodwill, like physically and, you know, emotionally. And now we're at a place where we're looking around and just going, okay, so I see what's left. Do I even want this here? Maybe I want to put this in a different room. Maybe I want to paint this pink. Maybe I want to replace this. Does this still even hold value for me? And that's kind of the biggest thing, is the questioning and how your behaviors, you know, your thoughts, what is it? Your thoughts turn into feeling, what is it? Your thoughts turn into feelings and your feelings turn into behaviors. That's what Mm-hmm. And you got to see a lot of that in Bevy's book, of her thinking of something, figuring out how it made her feel, and her having the awareness of, do I like this or not? And then her making a decision on how to move forward, and her behaviors lining up with that decision. And that's how you truly make change. Not to say that it will always be perfect, because in her book, she goes about telling about situations where things were less than perfect or ideal, but she always came back to making it work. And I think that's where, you know, grit comes in. It's where mm-hmm. tenacity comes in, being not only responsible, but resourceful, you know, thinking creatively. And both of us really have that, you know, both of us had situations come up in our lives in the last, like definitely the last 5 years, that we've had to be resourceful. We had to be tenacious. We had to think creatively to get things done.
Oof, child.
Right?
Yeah. So before we go like too deep, we both highlighted some stuff, you know, that kind of stuck out to us in the book.
Right.
So right. Her last corporate job that she had, well, I mean, and I guess you could say she's corporate now because she does like the Beverly Hills talk show. Right. But the last corporate job that she had was Rolling Stone.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she talks about how she was like, at first, her first job, she was like making like $15,600. Mm-hmm. And then at Rolling Stone, she was like making $250,000 with like bonuses, and then going to mm-hmm. fashion shows and this mm-hmm. and that, expense account. So she was like living high the hog. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? She was doing good. But then she also, let me see, I'm trying to get, all right. Oh yeah, she talks about, because she worked at Vibe before, mm-hmm, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see, I read it, but then I always feel like I forget stuff. But anyway, she worked at Vibe, so, you know, obviously there it's lots of Black people.
Mm-hmm. Lots of people of color, but mainly Black people, yes.
Yeah, and then she went back to, then she went to Rolling Stones, and she said, I realized I was holding on to the hurt that had happened to me when I was in middle school. I was afraid, but it was time to release the narrative and the personas I had created along the way to hide the core of who I was, Lil Brown mm-hmm. Bevy. Because, you know, she talks about being like the only Black person there. She also mm-hmm. talks about how she was just like a bitch of a mm-hmm. boss to have, you know. She was like, sorry to my assistants, but, you know, maybe I put some work ethic in you. So, not really, sorry.
Right. I had, that was a little bit of a trigger for me because.
Me too. I do not like mean bosses. I had a boss who was really not nice. Same. And like to the day, like to this day, I still remember it and it affects me. And mm-hmm. maybe people might see me as weak or whatever, but if I'm a boss to someone else, I want to be nice. Now, I will say I'm in situations like, you know, well, for example, like with a plant swap where I get very like, you know, I start directing, like do this, yes, do that, delegating, do that. Yeah. There you go. That's the word, delegating, but I'm not mean about it. You know what I mean? No. I'm just like, okay, let's get this done. And then we'll focus yes. later. You know what I mean?
Right,
but
right, right.
I am not down with like sucking someone's joy.
Girl.
And no. There's people out there that do it. And I don't think that's fine. Mm-mm. And I don't think that's okay.
Yeah. And I, we can come back to this because I have an antidote or not an antidote, excuse me. That's not the word. Anecdotal of having a mean boss. And really what it stems from when you all put it together is if you are lacking in any regard, you will project it onto others. And now looking back
yep.
situations for both of those bosses, but the one in particular I'm thinking about in my early years in my 20s, you know, there was a lack of joy in her life. There was a lot of responsibility. She had a lot of, you know, people, not responsible. Well, she had a child, so she was responsible for her child to an extent. But people had a lot of roles for her that she had to play. And I don't necessarily know if she enjoyed any of those roles, but because she wanted certain outcomes, she played into them. And so there was that projection of me being free of those roles and being able to navigate and be whoever I really want to be, as well as being young and not having all the quote unquote professional background. And so there was a lot that she did impart on me that I still to this day carry in my professional demeanor and how I carry myself and how I conduct myself in professional settings. Still to this day, I use some of the tactics when I walk into a room and I don't know anybody, but it's like a professional setting.
Mm-hmm.
So there was some parts that I did glean from her, but there were some other parts that, man, she like, ooh, my little feelings. And I had to learn quickly that not everything that someone tells you is gospel. It is just their experience. And you have to decide.
That's on to the next quote I got.
Okay. You have to decide if you want to take that on or not. Like it could just be like, you know, like you're driving down the road and you see a sign that says, you know, 50 miles to Chapin. You may not be going to Chapin, but it's telling you it's 50 miles to Chapin. And you're like, okay, well, that's good to know. And then you keep it pushing. But you know, when you're young and 20 and impressionable, you take most of the time, unless you have a really strong core about you, everything, especially people from adults, because you're taught to listen to your elders and all this stuff as truth. And it's not necessarily truth. It may be facts, but it may not be truth. And so learning that difference is something that, I mean, just for me came with time. But yeah, I'll actually we can dive a little bit deeper, not too deep, but yeah, the meme boss thing, hoochah, I did. I felt triggered. I'm not gonna lie. I just immediately took me back to that time in my 20s with that boss. And I was like, whoo.
Well, and you know, so on to also the next quote that I mm-hmm. have here. It says, folks will ask for your opinion, mm-hmm. but they don't really want it. They want you to co-sign what they believe about themselves. And I have definitely have learned that and believe that, you know, so mm-hmm. if someone asks me opinion about something and I tell them and they ask me again, mm-hmm. I'm going to tell them the same thing. They get mad. I'm like, well, I told you the first time, so I'm not sure why you're getting upset. What you're trying to do is think you're going to wear me down until I finally agree mm-hmm. with you. But what I say the first time is what I said. If you mm-hmm. can't handle it, that's not my problem.
Right.
But then also now, like, you know, what you're saying about your boss, you do also realize now, like, you can see it from all ways, like, okay, no, but she had this going on, but, you know, that still wasn't cool. It's like, you can still sympathize with somebody.
Correct.
Well, you do no harm, take no shit. Like, okay, I do understand you're going with this, but you're not going to talk to me that way.
Oh, of course. Having those boundaries would have been very key. And there was a lot of blending and, you know, people pleasing on my part and lack of boundaries, you know.
You're young and you're, you know, we're young, we're dumb, but we're impressionable, you know.
Right.
We're Black, we're told to be a certain way. So.
Correct. I mean, so that's kind of one of the things I was like, I really hope, you know, young people in particular, like in your teens and 20s, especially, understand that, you know, for lack of a better term, boundaries are necessary in all parts of your life, not just romantic, not just familial, but work as well. Like, yes, you are a boss to me. You are, you know, upper management. You're my superior, but doesn't mean you're my God.
Right.
And you don't get to treat me any type of way. And to one of the biggest things that I've learned is when you have that ability to walk away from something, it gives you such an assurance that no one can take away from you. And the problem is a lot of people don't have that ability to walk away because they need their job or they need this experience. So it's like, all right, how can I manage this situation? Because some people are just mean as hell. Just they're just who they are. But how can you navigate the situation to still keep your soul intact, your feelings out of it, get the job done, get the experience, and get out?
I mean, that's basically kind of how I am with my job at the moment.
Correct.
Things have been restructured, and I'm kind of using it like the way Bevy's using it for like plans that I have. And then it's just like, whatever, you know what I mean? And it kind of goes to, I had told you about a book I wanted to find about stoicism. It's like, you know,
oh girl, we got days on that.
Well, that'll be another episode. I don't know if I'm gonna go with that book. I was reading the reviews, but then again, maybe, I don't know, I'll go with it. But I mean, it's just basically, and then surprise, I'm bringing up yoga. You know, just what I've learned in that, just taking a minute before you respond, trying to see it from both ways. You know, I always use like the deathbed analogy. Am I going to be thinking about this on my deathbed? No. What I'm going to be thinking about is my son. So I don't care.
Right. Which is a good segue, because like there's two quotes that, well, technically three. All right. Let me limit myself. So I'm not going to dive real deep into like the paragraphs that I have highlighted, but shoot, that's not what I wanted. Go away. Thank you. But there are some that really stick out. The one, since we're talking about jobs, is I'll surmise it, but there's a part where she talks about Rolling Stone, and she said, you know, not every, you know, job or is going to be your lifelong career. Right. And sometimes they have a positive effect on you, and sometimes they are just a learning experience. But, and some of them you won't feel connected to you, and that's okay. She's like, you know, you may not have found the right thing, keep searching. And she's like, a paycheck is a paycheck is a paycheck. And sometimes it's just a stepping stone, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think, especially with us being millennials and being raised by boomers, it's that you find a good job and you stay there and then you retire. And we don't live that life. We don't see that. I mean, the days of pensions and staying with a company for 30, 40 plus years are very few and far between. And so we want to live a life that includes work, but not work to have a life, you know? And so work takes a different position in our life. And there's nothing wrong with having a job, to have a job so it can pay you to live your life. As long as you're not like it's sucking the soul, or you're, you know, doing anything against your morals. it's okay. If it's the stepping stone to get you to the next place you want to be at, do the thing and get out when you want. And
guess what? We're not all going to get there at the same time.
No, it's a journey. And Malik had a live a couple of weeks ago where she talks about, real quick, about, you know, life is a journey. And when you get to a spot, you get to a spot. It doesn't mean it all ends. It continues. It ebbs and flows. And I was like, that makes so much sense, because we're very much destination driven, especially if you're goal oriented like myself. And so you get so narrow minded, myopic in the whole destination that you don't enjoy the journey and you don't celebrate your wins. And you definitely get more devastated about any losses or any impediments to your destination, instead of looking at it as
right
a learning, you know.
Right, you don't have to, like, it's kind of like, you don't have to enjoy the process, but do appreciate it.
Some things just suck, and that's okay. You know, sucking is a thing. Just like being frustrated and all the stuff. And we repeat this over and over again, that you can really hold two things at once. Something can be, you can be appreciative about something and still not like it.
Yeah.
You can do that. You don't have to be like, oh, appreciation equals I must like it. No. Cause there are definitely some lessons that I've learned that I appreciate, but did not like, and did not like going through them. However, I still can say I'm grateful for it, because you learned something and now you can move forward, you know? So
Yeah. That
was one. I'm going to pivot a little bit, because this was another one that I had that I was just like, ooh, child, read me for filth. This quote, it's nice often just means forgettable and nondescript. In short, it is an overrated word.
Oof, yes.
I was like, ah, because I really tied myself to this idea of being nice, which is hilarious, because I got a book about 4 or 5 months ago, and it talks about not being nice, but being kind. And in the tone of, you know, Jesus wants you to be kind, not nice. And so it's a Christian book, but it's especially written towards women, and talking about the trappings of being nice. And I started it, but I haven't finished it. So I want to go back to it, because it's really like pushed me in that. And I've seen this like on the internet about people talking about, you want to be kind and not nice, because essentially, niceness is in so many ways either people pleasing, it can be manipulative, it can be deprecating on you, because you want to feel these social constructs of what is perceived for a person and how they interact. And it may not be beneficial to you or that person, but because it's under this guise of being nice, it's presentable. And instead, you know, shooting for kindness is more of being wholehearted, is being more vulnerable.
It's being intentional.
It's being intentional and having integrity, right? Because you can be nice and have no integrity. You can be nice to someone and completely hate their guts. But
that will be most of your adult work life.
Pretty much. But being kind to someone is, you know, you can say no to someone and still be kind. You can enforce boundaries that protect yourself and still be kind. So kindness is definitely what is taught, and it's very biblical, but niceness is what's been given in more palatable forms, especially in like the Christian community and in church life and all this other stuff, because it allows for people to run around amok and under this whole guise of being quote unquote nice. And so when I read this line, it really made me think about that, because it's true. Whenever you refer to somebody as nice, it's very much a like low level word. It's not dynamic. It's not, it's not that even that descriptive, other than, you know, this person, you know, will treat you in a way that you possibly will enjoy, maybe or maybe not, you don't know. But, you know, oh, that person's nice. If that's all they have to say about you, it's like, well, dang, there's nothing else to you. There's, where's your light? Where's your color? Where is your depth? Anything. Like, at least if somebody says, you know, that heifer's meaner than, you know, a dog with a bone, I at least know something about you. You know what I'm saying? As opposed to, oh, she's nice. Is she funny? Is she pretty? Does she cook well?
Right. Yeah.
What is that? And it's easily forgettable. So I was just like, wow. And I just took that to heart into how I look at some of the things that I do. And it was like, you know, yeah, you can quote unquote try and please people and be this nice persona, but is that really getting you what you want? And what are you also lacking, and what are you trying to gain out of the interaction, as opposed to just being your true self? Because quiet as his cat, I'm really not that nice of a person.
I'm really not.
I can be a very kind-hearted individual. I can be empathetic. I can sympathize with people. I can relate to people. But nice, when I really think about stuff, I'm like, no. Mm-mm. So that one was really like, woo chow woo. Mm-hmm. And then this one that really came up with me is in regards to how I want to move going forward is being like a mentor. Like, I don't see myself as a mentor right now, but in the future I would like to, you know, pull people up or blaze a path for them to be able to utilize.
You think maybe you should try to change that mentality of, I don't see myself as a mentor now? Like, why not? You can be one.
Yeah, I can. I guess because I'm not actively mentoring anyone. I'm not actively involved in anyone's life mm-hmm. that would perceive me to be a mentor. So that's why I don't think of myself as a mentor. But if I would say I was acting more in a mentor fashion when I was at my previous job, because we had interns. Not to say mm-hmm. current job doesn't have interns. They do, but they only have them at the headquarters, and I'm not in the headquarters. So my previous job, I was able to work with the interns and work with some of like the new hires on our team and kind of guide them and give them like heads up and provide that feedback that they may need, and just give them like, hey, this is things I would have enjoyed to have known when I first started working here, you know, use it, or, you know, if it's beneficial to you, great. If it's not, leave it on the floor where it is. And I was able to act in that capacity. So I felt like it. In this position, not so much. It's more of, if anything, I'm kind of mentoring myself and being more of a colleague to my coworkers. So exchanging stuff back and forth and that. I haven't made it a priority to put that in my life through other means outside of work. So I will admit that. Because back when I was in Columbia, you know, I used to do the Girls Who Code, 100 Girls Who Code. I used to do, you know, work with our interns at work. I used to do, you know, different tech meetups and stuff. And like, was very much involved. Mm-hmm. And here in Atlanta, you know, I just got my footing, and then pandemic. So it's made a little bit of a challenge. Mm-hmm. Not to say you can't do that via online, but it's a lot. It is, I will say, it's definitely not as challenging when you can do this person to person type of thing. So,
right. Okay. So I'm going to pivot again. Let's mm-hmm. get into, obviously, the fun parts of the book.
Okay.
Bevy loves her lovers.
Oh my gosh, her lovers. I like, love all of it.
She's, yeah, you know, she's like safe sex, of course. And it kind of reminded me of like when I read Gabrielle Union's book, and she was basically like,
oh yeah,
use your pussy, use it up, use it all the way up, use it till you can't use it anymore. Just use that pussy and
use it. Don't sit here and be trying to wait for it and uphold it, put it on some darn pedestal. Cause let me tell you what these men ain't doing. Okay. But
be safe. And it also reminds me of, I was listening to another podcast and they were talking about your girl, Regina.
Which one? Regina Hall?
Yes.
Oh, I love her.
Somebody was saying something about some guy and they're like, oh, I don't know if I should sleep with him and this and that. Regina Hall was like, girl, do you know how many ugly men I've had my ass up in the air for?
Right. love her so much. Oh, I love her. Regina Hall. Oh, in my head, I think we would be utter besties. It's her and Yvonne Orji. I swear Yvonne Orji and I, if we ever got together, it would be hilarity. But yes. I remember you telling me about that quote and I just was like, duly noted.
So listen, all the guys you sleep with ain't gonna be pretty.
Girl, no.
But, you know, do what you gotta do, sis.
Hey, if it hits right, just be safe.
Exactly. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
You know?
Yes, definitely. And hey, if that's not your thing, that's totally not your thing. Just don't judge.
Don't judge. We're not out here shaming folks.
No, let's get over that. Anyways, you know, so that was, she's had, you know, older lovers, younger lovers, her age, you know, she's had it all. Some guys that she's still good with, like she's like dropping these rappers, like she said, she's going to save that for another book. And I really hope she tells it all. I don't care if she like presses send on her deathbed and it's like, okay, now you can publish it. As long as I live like at least a week longer than her, I am going to read that book.
Yes, I just need to live a good week to 2 weeks after you publish the book so I can grab it and just give me all the salacious, you know, what's the other word that people use? I can't think of it, but give me all the good. I want it all. But I think that was the best part for me, was to read those parts, because I was like, stand in your truth. And there is like power in owning that you are a full human, you are a full woman and expression, and that includes your sexual and sensual powers. Like that includes your sensuality, your sexuality. Like we are not a monolith, we're not out here, and like, not to say being pious is something bad or anything, but also being a sexual person is being a whole person. And I think it's so good to have that out, because a lot of times people like to frame women, especially women of importance and that have done things and, you know, all this other stuff, as being these pious, well-kept women that no one has touched. And it's like, they've had lovers. In the words of Regina, they have had their ass in the air for somebody, multiple bodies. And it doesn't make them any less than.
Oh my God. I remember when me and my friend, we were younger, we were like, we're not getting married. We're going to be like Samantha Sex in the City. And we were talking about something. I was just like, yeah, like such a, I can't remember. Maybe also about Samantha. We're like, yeah, Samantha slept with a lot of guys. We're saying something. And she was like, well, that's going to be us too, because we never got married. And she wasn't saying in a joking way. She was just like, girl, that's our future. And I was like, oh yeah, you're right. It just cracks me up. I mean, then we both ended up getting married and whatnot. She's still married. But it was just so funny. Even back then, we were just like, meh. The number's going to be high.
Look, the body count will be what the body count is. A.
And I mean, you know, didn't happen, but I'm just saying.
Right. And that's the other thing. Like, I really thought about it and it's like, who are you saving, or who are you helping by not learning and exploring that side of yourself? no one to measure up to this ideal or this perception of a type of person. It's like, girl, bye, you know? And I like to think, if I can't get into heaven because I've slept with a couple of men, I was like, who else ain't getting in there? Because I know it ain't just going to be me. And also, there's called repentance, and it's covered underneath the blood. And obviously, heaven is full with a whole bunch of women and no men, because I know these men out here be hoeing. Hoeing.
Oh my goodness gracious. With
a capital W.
Yeah. So
I love that about Bevy and her being so transparent and speaking to it in an empowering way and not, oh, I'm so ashamed. No, there's no shame there. Bevy knows what she likes and she is not afraid to get her kicks. If yeah. you are the provider of it, consider yourself blessed.
Pretty much.
So I love that. I'm trying to think of another part of the book that I thought was fun. I loved hearing about her travels. I love when she talked about her dad and her mother. Man, let me tell you, Mama Smith, I love her independence as a mother. I love the fact that her dad was the main caretaker and the nurse.
Yeah.
Like, her mom was like, I'm gonna go play cards with the girls. Y'all enjoy. I will see you when I see you. And even though, like, she, you know, cleaned houses and did other type of labor, she still was cute and showed up and told them people what she will and will not do and who and how they will treat her. I love that independence and her being so assertive. I think that was such a good role model for Beth's sister and even her brother too.
And I'm not going to give it away, but you guys have got to read the book and just like the last questions her dad was asked, you know, like, I mean, and then, you know what, I'm not even saying this like in a rude way, but it was just like simple, you know what I mean? It wasn't anything extravagant. It was just all about family and, you know, just doing things that make you happy. And that's just like, truly, when it comes down to it, that is what it is.
Very much so. When I read that section, another thing I pulled out of that, and I'm not going to give it away, the thing that really stood out to me was racism and white supremacy. I was like, this man lived his life the best way he could, you know, overcoming surmountable things to live a life that's comfortable for himself and his family. And God knows who he would have been if he was not born in the Jim Crow South. If we didn't even have Jim Crow, like, what if we lived in a world where that wasn't even a thing? Who he could have been and what he could have accomplished. And I'm like, that's the thing. I don't know if people really gather when we talk about, you know, racism. It's not, it is the immediacy of our lives. It is the immediate possible loss of life, but it's also the loss of possibility and who and what you can do and be and your family exposed and encounter and all that stuff. And I was like, God darn. I mean, like, you realize it and then you realize it when you read it and you're just like, things that you just, we now have the opportunity to encounter. And you think about it as like, we, and we're like in our late 30s. Like, her father wasn't that old, you know, because Bevy is 54. I think she'll be 50. She's 55 this year. So her father, I think, was like in his late 80s, early 90s, maybe. Her father's not that old. And it's just like, God, her man, just taken. And it's, even though he lived a life, it's like, how much more, you know? Just how much more. So There definitely are some, the answers to his interview were so heartfelt and just made me think about all the other Black men in my life, especially older Black men mm-hmm. in my family and I've encountered, and just think about them and, you know, all that they went through. And yeah. The stories that I may not know. So, you know what I'm saying? So that part was really touching, and I just really am glad she shared that, you know, with us. I really appreciate just overall the books, the vulnerability and the transparency that she had.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's the only way you're going to really connect with people. And she spoke a lot about that with her little brown bevy. Mm-hmm. And when you read the book, you understand where that phrase come from and who that is to her and how she lives her life according to that pennant. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a core piece of her and how she navigates. And it's mad. It's her North Star. And to kind of pivot a little bit, I kind of want to talk about what, you know, we kind of glazed over, like, our feelings and connections to the book, but what is kind of like next, and what are you kind of like taking away from it?
You know, just really, for one, being careful about who I tell my ideas or thoughts to. Just kind of, like I said, putting myself out there and not really worrying about the opinions of others. I'll tell you about a situation that happened, you know, once we get off the podcast with someone. And just, you know, realizing that if, like, whatever someone is reflecting onto you is just, like, really, like, them.
Correct.
And then just, like, God, we're still, you know, young as fuck, and we have Girl. More than enough time. Like,
more than enough time, and yet we're sitting here going, oh my God.
Life is just getting good.
It's just getting good. It's just getting started. And it really, I was thinking about that the other day, and I can't remember if I talked to you. No, it wasn't you, it was somebody else. I had this thought about, you know, death and the finality of it, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, mm-hmm. what I really want to get some more time into is not where I want to be, but what do I want to give? What do I want to see happen?
Yeah.
You know, and not just for me per se, but for my family, for my friends, especially my friends with kids, so like you and your kids and stuff. And this whole thought of, you know, well, I'll leave it when I'm dead. And I was like, why the hell do I want to wait till then? I know my controlling ass does not want to sit here in heaven going, I told them no. Like, just do it while you're alive. Like, you can have way more impact here in the now as opposed to waiting in the afterlife, you know? Like, why do you got to wait till you're dead to give away something or to bequeath something? Can't you just give it now? Or maybe not like now as in like today in this moment, but like 10 years from now, 15 years from now, if I do things now to put aside so that I can provide, you know, how much of an impact that could provide to my friends and family. And then I could see that, like, I thought about that. The reason why I came all together was like, I don't necessarily know if I want a funeral. I was like, I kind of want a pre-funeral. Like, I want y'all to tell me how much you love me and celebrate me and love on me while I'm here. I don't want you to wait until I'm dead. Okay,
I like that.
You know, like, have a goodbye, but like a goodbye party where you're still there, where you can enjoy it. Cause it's like, when you're gone, you're gone. You don't know what
yeah.
you don't know how yeah. they felt. And I was like, let me do this now. I want to know now. I want to be impactful now. I want to do the things now. And that's like, I think that would be a greater cause. So when I leave, I can leave fully exhausted and spent. And been like, I'm going.
Like, I really need to die because I'm just fucking tired.
Listen, I can go home and be like, it is a home going because I have been out in these streets doing God's will and work, and I am ready to go home. to be with my Lord. And that's kind of like, dude, that's way more empowering and uplifting than thinking, oh my God, what am I gonna do when I die?
Yeah,
you
absolutely.
Way more power than that. So that's dope. I like that. I think for me, one of the things I took that's very much parallel to yours about the ideas and thoughts that you have and being very close to chest with them is a part in the book where she talked about a couple of times where she had ideas or people told her that she's really good at stuff and she brushed it off. And I was like, no. So in particular, there was one instance where this guy was like, no, I think you would be a really good music artist. And was like, we should cut a record and we should do this and that. And she's like, no. I'm just better at being the support and being the help. Mm-hmm. And, you know, really trying to play up that whole supportive woman thing. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm your lover, but I'm also, you know, your rah-rah cheerleader, which is valid. You know, however, he was like, no, I think you really would be good. And she looks back and she's like, no, he's right. I would have been awesome. And I was like,
and she would have been closer to having her EGOT.
Yeah, she would have been way closer to having her EGOT. And you got to read the book to understand why she wants EGOT. Anyway, and I thought about that. And so kind of parallel to yours was how many times have people told me things, people who have my best interest at heart, who know me, who love me, who want the best for me, tell me things. And I
raise in my hand. I'm sorry, I raised my hand. I accidentally muted myself. I raised my hand.
And I was like, that has to stop. That has to stop. Because you don't know if God is talking through them to you about.
I was, y'all. I just zoomed in real close on the camera so she can see my eye.
Like, I just see her eye. But it's true. And I said, Janelle.
That's the whole person's, their house is, there's a flood and the house, God's going to save me. And a boat comes by. No, God's going to save me. Then a helicopter comes by. The person dies, go to heaven, say, God, wouldn't you save me? He said, I send you two things,
man. What did you want me physically to come down and personally save you? Are you serious? No. And that's kind of where I was like, dang, how many? And so you have to forgive yourself. And you have to do that radical acceptance. And then you have to sit there and go, not again. So going forward, you know, not to say you're going to do every single idea that somebody gives to you. But at least to think about it and be like, let me honestly get curious about this thing. Does this align with what I truly want in life? Could this help me in that, you know, journey? And if I want to just try it, is it a big thing? And just get curious. And it's like, how much more empowering and how much more does that make your life more colorful, more enriching to just try? And yes, you're not going to be great at everything the first moment or whatever. And some things you'll just learn like, that wasn't my shtick. I gave it an honest effort, put some time and energy behind it. But gosh, the story you'll get out of it, you know, and the learning you'll get out of it that you could use later. And maybe that situation that you tried for puts you in a position to meet a person that you really need to meet to get you to what you really want. And you do something totally different, 180. But if you hadn't stepped out and tried it, universe would have had to make it happen another way. You know what I'm saying? But it was like, so it's very much parallel to what you're saying of, you know, when you have something that's a deep desire or a deep thought and you're like, you might get naysayers or people projecting because they want to keep you safe. They want to make sure that, you know, you quote unquote don't fail, which is well-meaning. But it also keeps you in this box. And we're not about boxes. We're not about holes and being enclosed. We're about expansion. Boundaries are key, but boundaries don't mean walls. And right. boundaries can always expand and contract, you know? So
listen, in conclusion, read the book.
Please
it's,
do.
It's really good.
It's so good. And there's so much, there's so many fun stories yeah, that she talks about. Oh man, her travels is what I really, really enjoyed. Because you know I'm a travel fiend. Mm. And I really enjoyed the fact of the reason why I really came, was drawn to the book was the age. So like we're at her age in which she started this whole self-discovery.
Yeah.
And self, invention, reinvention really. And, or would it be a reinvention or would it more be like an unlearning?
Say like a unlearning and a rediscovery. Cause we're going back to our old, or going back to our old selves.
Correct. Correct. And so that's where I was like, this is what I need because this is what I'm going through. And I mean, like you and I are both rediscovering, you know, our inner selves, our inner children, and nurturing them and giving them all the things that we would want when we were children, that not to say our parents were incapable of, but maybe didn't have the resources and tools to do so. And it's okay. We can forgive them and we can like still accept them for who they are. And as adults, we now have the ability to do that for ourselves and to ourselves. And then at the same time, realizing as adults, what do we do here? How are we navigating? How do we, you know, it's not like a how-to guide. It's more of a I won't say a parable. Mm-hmm. But it's just her truth. It's just her truth. And just seeing her truth, it's helpful in knowing it can exist. It's a reality that exists because a lot of times when you look out and you see people who are doing well, it's very much a one type of thought or one type of view. You don't see a lot of people giving this information of when I was 33, I had a complete and utter, you know, meltdown because I realized I was living this life that I don't want to live anymore. Those are not conversations that are usually had or shared. And they're so key because having like a third life crisis or a quarter life crisis, it's a real thing because you have the expectations that you have of yourself, of your society, of your culture, of your family. And at, you know, between the ages of 25 and 35, even going up into 40, they clash and you're sitting there going, what is wrong with me? And there's nothing wrong with you. You are really having that moment of what am I doing? Do I want to do it? And if not, what do I need to change? And that is powerful. And I really, really, really am excited, not only for ourselves, but for others to have that moment of awakening, because that's when true change happens. Not only for yourself, but for everyone that's connected to you, because you doing that empowers others to do the same. And I think that's what this book really helped, was to empower you to do the work so that you can live your life on your terms.
Woof! And on that note, Bevelations, Lessons from a Mother, Auntie, bestie.
In my head, she's my bestie. I love
read
you, Bevy.
It, you guys. It's a good one. Yes,
it's Bevy. Such a good. It's a good book. It's a good read. It's not like overly complicated. You ain't gonna have to worry about like, you know, some old Obama book where you're like, my gosh, I can see why you're a constitutional lawyer. Jesus.
I love Obama, but I'm not trying to read his books.
Girl, that is definitely an audio book I am going to.
He's so freaking corny too, so I can't.
Michelle, all day, I love you.
Yeah, seriously.
And Sasha Malia.
Yeah. Okay, don't go off tangent. All right, so tell the people where they can find us.
You can find us at Self Created Podcast is our website, as well as Self Created Podcast on Facebook, Self Created Pod on Instagram, as well as Twitter, selfcreatedpodcast@gmail.com. Hit us up in those DMs or via email if you have questions. We would love to get some questions and do some stuff with you. And that's mainly it. Of course, you can hear us on most podcast platforms. So we're on Spotify, we're on Apple Podcasts, we're on Google Podcasts, CastBox, and I think we're on some other ones too. Anchor is our newest Anchor. One. Mm-hmm. Of course, we still have...
Not going to get into that.
To my chagrin, we're still on SoundCloud. But that's mine. That I ate it.
That's... Jesus.
I mean, actually, Jesus had nothing to do with that. That was all.
We're still gonna try to figure that out.
I hope so. But anyway, so you can listen to us on those platforms as well as other. But just Google Self-Created Podcast, and we will come up. Like, subscribe, and comment. Yes. Would love to hear your suggestions for possible episodes. Love to hear your feedback. And share us, man. Definitely share us with your friends and fam. Boop, boop, boop. So yes, that's where they can find us. How mm-hmm. can they find you on the internet, Shanika?
ShanikaPishi.com. Sebastian Harper is my business. ShanikaPishi.com is my website. ShanikaPishi on Instagram, Twitter. ShanikaPishi Life is Pishi on Facebook. That's my Facebook page that you can like. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where you can find me.
Awesome. You can find me on Facebook page. It's Jurnelle S. Simmons. On Instagram and Twitter, it's JNS Simmons, but I am private. But I
the last time you posted on that page was Erica.
I know. I need to do better. So that is on my to-do list, and like not like a to-do list that I'm ever going to get to, but like legit I'm actively working on. So you all will see some progress second quarter. Betcha.
Oh, bless your heart. Okay, folks. Thanks for listening.
Bye.
As always. Oh, bye. Okay. Dang.
I'm sorry. When you had the thanks for listening, I was just like, oh, we're done, right? Sorry.
Bye, y'all. Bye.